Good morning. This is Jane Cormier, your host for Artful Living here on WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com, WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM Manchester. So we welcome everyone listening out there today. We have a fun conversation on tap today, and one that is going to be just a barrel of laughs for me, because I get to talk to one of my best friends in the opera world, and we get to talk about opera, which is always a fun thing. So our guest today is Wayne Rivera, and Wayne is, or was for many years, a professor at the Hart School of Music, and he is a professional opera singer, and just a guy that knows a whole lot about the opera genre. So we welcome Wayne. Welcome to Artful Living.
Thank you, Jane. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'm not even sure where to start. This is like a cornucopia of good things that we could talk about today. You know what? We're both opera singers in our past, and I think that we're both, because we're both older, we have a different vision than maybe the younger opera singer that's doing their thing today. But no less important, our view is no less important. So tell the audience a little bit about Wayne Rivera.
Well, Wayne Rivera is retired, but Wayne Rivera was an opera singer for many years. I sang in the United States and in Europe. And an interesting little bit of information for Jane and I is that we were actually in Europe at the same time, but we never crossed paths until we came back to the United States. So it wasn't meant to be back then, but it was certainly meant to be when we got back to the good old USA.
Indeed, indeed.
So, I was, I got my undergrad at Indiana University, a big opera school here in the U.S., and I got my master's degree from the New England Conservatory.
Awesome.
I sang for many years in New York and in Boston and all over the country, and then I went to Europe where I sang in the houses in Aachen, Germany, in Lyon, France, and in Switzerland.
Cool.
So it was quite a whirlwind, and I'm sure Jane's was as well, but she was doing it in other places at the same time.
We were in Europe, but different places in Europe. That's fine. It all works. So tell me, Wayne, what were you working? You were working at the Hart School of Music. Were there other colleges that when you, when you stopped singing or weren't singing as much on the stage, you went into education? So where have you taught?
Well, I had a really nice transition. I went from being a full-time opera singer to a part-time teacher, part-time opera singer. And then I went to being a part-time teacher, part-time opera singer, to basically a full-time teacher.
That's awesome.
And at the beginning, I stayed pretty much here in Connecticut. I was lucky to, I lived in Boston and I was doing a lot of work in New York, so there was a big commute back and forth. And someone told me, you ought to look into Hartford because it's halfway between.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did. And 39 years later, I'm still basically based in Hartford.
Yeah, that's great.
But I also taught at Wesleyan University for many years, and if I can brag a little bit,
sure.
My most famous student, I would have to say, is not an opera singer, because when I was at Wesleyan, I had a student for 3.5 years by the name of Bill Miranda, Lin-Manuel Miranda. We called him Bill sometimes, but his full name is Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I think everybody knows him as the composer of Hamilton.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, he was a voice student of mine, and he was a terrific student.
Isn't that great, huh?
Yeah.
Have you spoken to him recently?
I spoke to him years ago, not recently. He sent me tickets to hear his first big success, which was In the Heights.
Okay.
That was the first thing that he did.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I was not able to go. I didn't see him at that time, and of course he's now
big and famous
and all over the world and quite famous. Yeah.
Indeed. How interesting.
So, it was
very cool.
Yeah.
It's funny how we meet these people in our life, right? And it's just strange when they make it big, so to speak. And you remember them before they did. There's been a few people that I've met through the years that had the big career or when we were sort of, doing stuff together. But it's always kind of cool when a student jettisons.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool.
It certainly is. And I'm sure you've had some. I've had a couple of students that are doing very well right now, and I'm sure, Jane, you have as well.
It's always fun to see them. I think it's great. So let's talk a little bit. I know some of our listeners out there probably have a limited view or idea even of what opera is. And I can't blame them for that. I mean, sadly, I think opera is turning into a bit of a niche art form right now.
I think it is. You're right.
Yeah. So I think any opportunity that we can talk about it in a way that's accessible it's always a good thing. What brought you to the opera world?
Well, I have to say I had an Italian grandfather who loved opera, and I loved my grandfather. So the combination was there from a very young age, and I can still remember many, many hours spent with him listening to the radio, listening to operas, and that's how I really
you really were deep into the whole art form early.
I was. Awesome. I absolutely was, and I was exposed to it early, which I think is an important thing for everybody, because if we can expose younger children or younger adults to opera at an early age, they always have a greater appreciation for it because
they
assimilated
it
early on in their lives.
Right. And, of course, in Europe, opera is a viable, kids know about opera in Europe because they perpetuate the art form over there, whereas here, it's not really a big part of our culture anymore.
That's true. And it was very accessible when you and I were there. I mean, if you did an opera, chances are you got to do between 10 and even 20 performances of the same opera in a season.
Yep.
And it was cheap. Kids could go to the opera cheaply.
Sure.
Which is no longer the case.
Right. Which is kind of scary when you start to see what they're actually asking for prices. It's not even just opera, even Broadway or symphony tickets, everything is just so expensive.
Yeah, it's a car payment now.
Yeah, no kidding. How sad is that, right?
It is. It's very sad because I think it eliminates a lot of people from seeing it. They're doing outreach programs now that are very good, but it would be nice if anybody could just be able to go and really see live opera.
Yeah, because there is no change. No, there's nothing that you can substitute for that.
Yeah, and I think, Jane, you and I are on the same page here. Live opera, there's nothing like live opera. I know we have incredible strides made in technology, but there's nothing like actually hearing the animal in the theater live, and in most cases, unmiked.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. I mean, not even hearing the animal, but if you're going to a live performance, you actually feel it. You could feel the singer. I've always felt that. I've always
felt that,
you know, especially if it was a great singer or a very accomplished singer, you can actually feel what they are doing and how they're, you know, putting their performance on that stage.
Yep.
And you can't get that in a recording, and you can't get that even in, you know, a 15-minute little presentation. You know,
it's a visceral experience, and I think a lot of that is because there's tremendous energy expelled in singing opera. And performing opera.
Undoubtedly. You know, it's interesting. You said that you started young. I laughed at my first take of opera, which really wasn't until I was about 21, 22. And I was a musical theater gal and took tap for like 14 years. And I was going to go on be a big Broadway star. That's what I was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was very lucky. I went to a small college. And the head of that department was an opera impresario. He was really gifted at what he knew and what he experienced. He spent his summers in Germany, going to all the opera, you know, opera productions for almost his entire adult life. So this man really was seeped. Charles Lunnington was his name. And when I got into school, I started taking voice lessons, and the teacher was trying to make me sing. You know what my first aria was? I mean, this teacher, God bless her. Mi chiamano Mimi.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, the first one, no wonder I didn't like it. I was like, what is this? For those that don't know, Mi chiamano Mimi is from La Boheme, and although it's not a tremendously difficult piece, it's not beginning opera by any stretch for a singer, for a young singer. So I remember one time I actually threw a score. It was the only time I ever did anything like this, ever. In that, in she was really berating me at the piano, and you know, I must have been 21, and I was really upset. And I took the score and I threw it on the ground, and I left the studio in a huff. And I never did that before, and I have never done it since. But I was just hopelessly frustrated. But
well, you were a diva in training even then.
I never even knew it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Now the word diva has been applied to all kinds of kinds of singing. In your day, in my day, I believe when you said diva, you were specifically talking about a female opera singer.
That's right. That's changed as well.
Now we have pop divas and rock divas and God diva, knows what
just
kind
regular
of divas.
Divas. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a little break here. We're speaking with Wayne Rivera from the Hart School of Music, and we're talking opera. So stay tuned, WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com, at 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord and 101.9 FM in Manchester. I am your host, Jane Cormier, and today we're speaking with an opera performer, teacher, somebody who's really, really been, well, has opera in his blood. His name is Wayne Rivera, and we're sharing some opera stories and talking a little bit about this art form that, I hate to say the words, but I feel it's true, is somewhat in decline. For an art form that, when it began, was all about being accessible to the people that it was serving. We now have this little niche art form where it's really tremendously expensive to go to, and maybe not as supported as it should be here in the States. So what is your take on where opera is today, Wayne?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Jane, because I think opera is, it's out there. I mean, it's in everybody's faces, but it's kind of a different kind of opera. It's become a different kind of art form. We've gone very much from the singing being paramount to the singing being almost like fourth or fifth in line here, after the visual and the director and the costumes and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, we are old school, so we're going to probably go. We're going to go to the big stage in the sky believing what we believed back when we were young singers.
That's right.
But I still believe that opera, one of the things that people go to the opera for is to hear great, good, or great singing.
Mm-hmm.
And while we do have some good and great singing today, that's not always the case. And it, sometimes it's tried, they try to make up for that by production values and visual things.
Mm-hmm.
And to quote a very old opera person, Gioachino Rossini, who's everybody probably has heard of The Barber of Seville, knows Figaro, Figaro, Figaro. They asked Rossini what were the three most important things in an opera. And in Italian, he said the three most important things are voce, voce, voce.
Yes.
Which means voice, voice, voice. So that the voice is number one. And if you haven't got the voice, you're not going to be as big a success in the field of opera.
Well, that was true in the past. I'm not sure that that's true right now.
No, because we again, we're into, we're also, for lack of a better term, Jane, I think we're into dummying down to the audience a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
And while I've been accused of being elitist, and opera aficionados have been accused of being elitist, but in some ways it is an elite art form, and that's what people gravitate to. Now, that doesn't mean it's not for everybody.
Right.
It is for everybody. But in the fact that it is an elite form, it's for somebody that wants an elite art form.
Right.
If you want rock music, that's less of an elite art form because you don't have to invest as much of yourself in understanding it.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally visceral, mostly with the rhythm, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the case of an opera, if you want to enjoy an opera to its fullest, you have to do a little bit of homework. You have to go in there and you have to understand, well, this was a composer who composed at this time when the music was in this period.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a story. Some of them are historical. Some of them are biographical. Some of them are just made up.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a story. You have a plot. You have characters. They have names. in cases of historical ones, we even know what they supposedly looked like. Mm-hmm. And we've gone into an art form now that takes some of these great masterpieces, and in order to make them quote-unquote accessible to the public, they are changing them completely.
Yep.
They are taking them out of their original settings. They are making them into characters that I don't believe they were intended to be.
Right.
And I can always say that if you're looking at the operas of Mozart and any of the romantic opera composers, you know, 18th, 19th century, even early 20th century, they have, the charm of them is you really have a character that you can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a setting. I mean, and very often in the operas, the setting is referred to. I mean, I just think right at the top of my head of the opera Gianni Schicchi, which is set in Florence, in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much set in Florence. It's about a Florentine Italian family, and it has all of the historical spots in Florence that are even quoted in the opera. Now, if you take Gianni Schicchi out of that setting
mm-hmm.
and you put it on the moon,
yeah.
it's not going to have quite the same, it's not going to have the effect that it should have.
Details.
Yeah, and also the music is not going to depict what the composer was writing about.
Absolutely.
You know,
the whole thing that you're talking about, I think it is a multifaceted discussion in that there's many reasons, I think, why we have seen a decline in, you know, in opera in general. But I think the point you make that's very important is a little bit of work is what's necessary to sort of read and know what it's about. Sadly, the people that I think are producing these productions today, so like you said in the past, singers, you know, singers sing opera. They don't sing symphony. Opera is a vocal art form. And when you start taking that away, you have intrinsically changed that art
mm-hmm.
form. Because
mm-hmm.
it was built on the voice. It was built on the colors that the composer put into the music as needed to portray that specific character in that specific setting. So I think that we've gone through periods, right, in opera where it was singer-led, then it was impresario-led, then it was direct stage director-led. I think now it's being led financially. And there
mm-hmm.
are people on these boards that know nothing.
I think you're absolutely right. As many things are now being led financial
yeah.
in our lives.
Absolutely.
Many, many, many things that once had other, a little more altruistic values are now it's right down to the dollar.
To the dollar.
Yeah.
Right. And so if these folks are uneducated as to what, you know, Gianni Schicchi is supposed to be about, how can they possibly support what's important about that opera in bringing it to the audience?
Yep.
They're ignorant. They just want butts in the seats, and they will do whatever they can in the perception of what will make that happen, which makes, I think, these composers are up in heaven just looking down going, oh, my Lord, what are they doing to my piece?
Mm-hmm.
That really, I think
yeah.
that happens because the pieces, sometimes I go to an opera today and I wonder what happened. What did they do? And mind you, you know what? I'm not one of those that says you can't, quote, update or change a location, all right? You know, there are very few, but, you know, in very few situations I can almost agree with what they did. But that's not even what they're doing. Now they're going against even, I think, in many productions, what it's supposed to be about.
Well, I think a lot of these directors especially are going for shock value now.
Mm.
They're taking operas that were traditionally done like this. And I agree, Jane, you to just see the same thing, the same production over and over and over again with different singers is interesting because the singers are different, but
right.
it's not interesting as far as the production values go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are also in an age where they're relying heavily on the drama of the opera. You know, opera is not just a lot of people parking and barking and singing pretty notes and high notes and low notes
mm-hmm.
and fast notes and slow notes.
Mm-hmm.
It is drama. There is drama there. And this was, whether you like this artist or not, this was brought to a head to all of us by Maria Callas,
mm-hmm.
who came in and took an art form that had really turned into kind of dramatically meaningless and was just a bunch of singers, you know, singing pretty notes
yeah. Or moving around.
And fooling around into something that was dramatically valid and dramatically viable. Now, whether or not Collis did that on purpose, or whether that was a result of the fact that she happened to have been a great interpreter of opera. I think there are people that don't like her voice. There are people, that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
Because a lot of singing with opera singers and other voices, too, is you either like their voice or you don't like their voice. It's like you like chocolate or you like vanilla.
Sure.
And it doesn't matter if it's the greatest vanilla in the world. If you like chocolate, you're not going to really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But Collis started that, and that's now gone. The pendulum has swung to we are just looking at the dramatic value of the opera, and we're getting rid of the fact that opera is a very sophisticated type of singing that takes a lot of training, just like any sophisticated athletic does.
Yep.
It takes a lot of training to get there, and is really quite beautiful when it's done properly.
Right.
And in the past, even people that didn't understand what the singers were saying, because most often operas have been in a foreign language, were able to get some kind of a physical or dramatic reaction because of the beauty of the singing and the way it was done.
Right.
Is that optimum? No. If you know a little bit about the opera and what they're saying, it makes it even better.
Yeah.
But the power of the human voice, going back to Rossini, voce, 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 the power of the human voice is tremendous, just in the sound of it. And this goes back to what you said about live opera. When you feel that, when you get that actual visceral reaction to the sound of the voice, there's nothing like it, really.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're talking here with Wayne Rivera and WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester, WKXL. We'll be right back with Artful Living after this break. Welcome back to Artful Living here on WKXL, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com at 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Jane Cormier here, and we have a guest, Wayne Rivera, who is regaling us with his insight and knowledge on the opera medium, which is one of my favorite topics in the world. And we were just in this last segment discussing the importance of the voice in opera, how it is central to understanding what opera is supposed to be, and how we're seeing a bit of a decline in the importance of opera, of the voice within opera, which is probably a mistake. But you know, you brought up a couple of things that I'd like to throw at you in the last segment with regard to our discussion about how we've morphed opera into a sort of a different entertainment now with different entertainment values. How does this impact the young singers that we see learning the art form coming up through the ranks?
Well, Jane, you know, you and I can harken back to being young singers. When you're a young singer, and if you're really dedicated to what you want to do, and most opera singers are, you'll do anything you have to do to be able to sing.
Mm-hmm.
So young singers are going to do in many, even sometimes the seasonal professionals, if they want to appear in a big production with a big director in a big opera house, they may have to compromise their values a little bit and say, you know, I really wouldn't do this, but this is what the director wants, and therefore, if I want to be in this production, and I do, I have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just the way it goes. I think that's kind of the business side of opera, but it really happens. I see young singers now, and you know what they're focusing on. Yes, they're focusing on going and getting their voice to be better, but they're focusing on how they look. They're going to the gym. They're going to get headshots by professional photographers, none of which should be discounted, but all of which are not the initial and not the core reason for going to hear an opera.
Right.
I mean, if you don't like great singing, then don't go to hear an opera.
Mm-hmm.
And I, talking about old singers, if you can quote some of the old singers, what they said. Now, of course, they were coming from an era where the voice was everything, and you could get away with a whole lot of stuff. You know, the pendulum has swung way to the other side now.
Right.
In the old days, you know, it was park and bark. You could get great, big, fat, unattractive people to just stand in the middle of the stage and sing, and that was considered enough if they had a great voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer true.
Right.
I think that's good. But there's another part of it that says you sort of have to say, where is the real priority here?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I will go back and say this probably for the third time. In opera, the priority is the voice and the singing.
It should be.
Absolutely. And there's a very funny interview. You can probably still get it maybe on YouTube. Met used to have those intermission features where they interview opera singers, and they interviewed Zinka Milanoff. Zinka Milanoff was a great, great dramatic soprano that sang mostly the Verdi and certainly the Italian repertoire back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and
yeah.
a little bit later, maybe. And they interviewed her, and they were talking about back then, this was probably 20 years ago, they were talking about the dramatic values of the opera. And the acting that was involved.
Mm.
And she was talking with Cheryl Milnes, also on the film, who was a younger baritone, American mm-hmm. baritone. And he was talking about changing your voice. And Milanoff said, well, why would you change your voice if you have a beautiful voice? And he said, well, you know, Madam Milanoff, for the purpose of acting. And Milanoff's comment was, if you want to act, don't sing opera.
Oh,
well, that's a little bit severe in the other direction.
Yes.
But there is a point to that, because I can remember as a young singer, going back to my grandfather, sitting in his living room listening to the radio. Now, we had nothing visual to support us, nothing mm-hmm. stage-wise, dramatic, you know, with gestures or costumes or anything. And we were able to very, very much appreciate exactly what this composer was trying to do with
right.
this opera.
And so
it was all oral.
Absolutely. The acting was in the voice.
That was my next sentence.
Yeah.
A lot of the acting in opera can be done in the voice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean you have to change your voice and, you know, if the character's ugly, make your voice ugly. No, it's not. The characters are only the vessels through which we see human emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And human emotions are not, you know, confined to one segment. Human emotions are universal. So the emotions of hate and love and jealousy and sadness and happiness and all of that, that can all be portrayed with a great singer through the voice.
Absolutely.
The sound of the voice and the way they sing.
So you have actually, you've hit upon my question originally was, you know, what are we doing with young singers today? And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I do not believe that we are training these young singers to have emotional color in the voice, to where, and I tell my kids, I learned from Joan Dornemann, she used to say, the great singers, if they're blind, a listener is blind, you can hear what it is they're conveying in the acting.
Yes.
And that is what we should be training, and we're not. I think we're training for volume.
Mm.
I don't even think we're thinking about durable voices anymore. I don't think we're trying to teach technique so that the singer can have optimum numbers of years to sing. I think it's all about big. I really believe that. In the color aspect, I've seen way too many teachers out there that are more concerned about having a singer that's going to be big and famous and teach to that rather than to teach to thoughtful technical issues which should be addressed that can develop a voice in its color and depth of projection, of emotional projection.
I would totally agree with all of that, Jane. And in that same vein, I would say another thing that we've lost a lot of here is that opera singers are personalities. They're big personalities. In the old days, quote-unquote, opera singers were the rock stars of their generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, go all the way back to the castrati. There's a wonderful movie called Farinelli about the castrato Farinelli, who was very famous. He was a rock star
yep.
in his era. He was a personality. And it's just like Hollywood personality. Mm-hmm. People gravitate towards their favorite actor, rock star, opera singer. And these people become not only personalities, but they become characters that have very distinctive voices.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure you'll agree with this. Back in the days of, in the 50s and the 60s, we had a lot of great sopranos. But each one of those sopranos was an individual.
Yep.
They sang they sang the same repertoire, many of them, but they were individuals and they had individual sounds and mm-hmm. individual ways of singing.
Right.
And they became super personalities in the opera world. You could hear two notes of a soprano, you could say, that's Renata Tebaldi.
That's right, right.
Or two notes of a soprano and say, no, that's Maria Callas.
Mm-hmm.
Or two notes of a tenor and say, that's Richard Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
They had very distinctive, not only voices, not only the timbre and the quality of their voice, and the vibrato was also an issue here. Some people have faster or slower vibrato. But the way they sang,
mm-hmm.
what they did, the choices they made.
Right.
And they became individuals. And I think we've so much lost that.
Yes.
Today. We hear people that are good singers, technically good. They hit all the notes. They sing in tune. They're on pitch. They can be heard. But there's no magic going
right.
on.
Right. And that's what we're missing. That is the element, I think, that is helping keep opera down. I really believe it. If it's a vocal art form, which it is, whether
mm-hmm.
anybody wants to agree with that or not, it is intended to be a vocal art form.
Yeah.
If we are not training these youngsters or these younger singers to understand what you're talking about, what is special about this aria, what is special in how you want to portray it, they're not making those choices. You know, competitions was something that we did for, I think, 20 years, maybe more, here in New Hampshire. We had Opera Fest and we had Piccolo Opera, and we always had, always, for every year that we ran a little companies, we always had an annual competition. And I have to say, through the years, it became apparent to me more and more that these singers did not understand those choices that they could have taken. And it wasn't that they were bad singers, and it wasn't that, you know, this isn't a cut to anyone. This is that we were not fundamentally exposing them to the, well, not everyone, but I think many, too many, voice coaches or teachers were not educating those singers into the choices they had available to them to color with their voice, to paint with their sound.
Mm-hmm.
And that has hurt the art form.
Oh, I totally agree. And then if you want to go even further, I mean, there's always the issue of talent.
Yeah.
Because in the field of opera, as in many, many fields, I would say most fields, there is a talent involved. And the talent in the opera singer is the talent of singing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the talent of drama. It's creating drama through the singing.
Right.
And I would say that Milonoff was right. If you want to act, don't sing opera.
In some ways, I totally understand that.
Yeah.
Yep. This is Artful Living here on WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. We are here discussing opera, the world of opera, with Wayne Rivera. We're going to take a little break and come back on the other side. Welcome back to Art for Living here on WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Don't forget, all of our programming is also available at NewHampshireTalkRadio.com 24/7. You can listen to any of our shows here on WKXL right online. So today we've been discussing the world of opera with Wayne Rivera, who is a tenor extraordinaire and talented professor of voice. And we've been discussing what's happening and what isn't happening in the opera world today. Let me ask you, Wayne Rivera, who are your favorite singers?
Well, I have a long, long list, and I like different singers for different reasons, Jane.
Uh-huh.
Some singers I like purely because of the sound of their voice. The singer that I grew up listening to back in that age, I wasn't concerned about the drama as much as I have become later on in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the opera field has become more concerned with it, too. But just simply beautiful, beautiful voices. And there was always Renata Tebaldi came to mind for me. There are lots and lots of other beautiful singers who love beautiful voices. Sometimes you like a voice maybe because it's not quite so beautiful. I mean, if you go into talking about Maria Callas
right.
now, I would say I understand when people say, oh, she had an ugly voice. I never thought she had an ugly voice, but my answer to that always was, Well, that means that to me that she was even more amazing, because if she had an ugly voice, which I don't agree with, but I can understand why, because she made ugly sounds sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If she had an ugly voice, then she was incredible, because she was able to create incredible beauty with an ugly voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people that say that about Kalas, too, are somewhat ignorant, I think, because she went through different periods of her singing.
Right.
And when she was young, when she was the younger Kalas, her voice was beautiful. When she was doing the coloratura repertoire, it was individual, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't call that unattractive. It was Kalas. And then when she started doing Verismo opera, you know, the voice was going through its changes there. And then if you listen to the later recordings of Kalas, then that's where I think a lot of these people get their information, you know, about her, quote, unattractive sound, is maybe they're listening to the very late Kalas, you know? So I think you have to be careful when they're discussing that. They should be more cognizant of where in the career, right,
mm-hmm.
they're discussing
mm-hmm.
that voice.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a fine instrument, and I think it was incredible. Her coloratura was a force to be reckoned with when she was at her prime.
And her voice was probably a lot larger. I only heard Kalas live at the end of her career.
Mm-hmm.
And her voice was certainly ample, but it wasn't huge. Apparently at the beginning of her career, the voice was really very, very large.
Well, that's what she was studying. I mean, it was a different total of Fach.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah, and she sang Wagner, and, you know, she did the whole gamut of stuff. But she was an amazing singer technically, if you go back to her early. There's a wonderful masterclass given with Birgit Nilsson, and who was, as we know, one of the greats of all time, certainly in the Wagner repertoire. And they asked her about Kalas, and she got very sort of laid back, and she said, at her best, she was better than all of us put together.
Wow.
Coming from Birgit Nilsson is quite a statement.
Yeah. Well,
you
she
know, because
wasn't...
if you look, but Kalas could do it all.
Yep.
High, low, fast, slow.
That's right.
Like you said, incredible coloratura.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about these much lighter voices now with this coloratura. Kalas did better coloratura with a bigger voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that goes to number one, to the talent. I mean, obviously there was a great musical and vocal talent there.
Yeah.
And also she studied for years. Very hard, you know, daily, hours and hours a day.
Yeah.
You read the books on Kalas when she was a young singer. She dedicated her whole life to singing in her younger years.
Yeah, for sure.
So you asked me my favorite singers. Yeah, so Tabaldi, Kalas. I like people like, in today's climate, like people like Eva Marton, who again was sang really well at one time and at the end,
mm-hmm.
perhaps not so much. A lot of singers tend to sing beyond when they should.
Yeah.
And then it's sad because sometimes people only remember them for their latest recording.
I know, which is so bad.
But of course, you know, I've always loved Pavarotti. I thought he was a great technician and it was a beautiful voice.
Beautiful.
He had a great sense of the style of the music he sang in most cases.
Yep.
And all of it, mostly, I would say, my taste, because a lot of what you like in a singer is your taste in the sound. Again, I go back to chocolate and vanilla ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
I tended to go a little more to the Italian singers maybe than the others because I like that Italian sound,
mm-hmm.
and certainly in the Italian repertoire. So great baritones like Ettore Bastianini to me was one of the most beautiful baritone voices in the world. But we had in our age here, we had Dmitri Horostovsky,
mm-hmm.
who was a great admirer, I think, of Ettore Bastianini, and had a very, very beautiful voice.
And what a wonderful actor.
And a wonderful actor and a wonderful singer and a handsome man.
Yep.
So he's a man that luckily had it all, and sadly it was taken from him at a very young age.
Very
so,
sad.
Things like that.
Yep.
How about you, Jane? Who are some of your favorite singers?
You know what? Some of the same people that you discussed. I love Tucker. I think he was great.
Could I just jump in one thing? Because I was never a Tucker fan until I got Sirius Radio. And I started to listen to these live broadcasts. And I said to myself, oh my gosh, he never sounded like this on those recordings. It was unbelievably, to my ear, so much more when you heard him in a live performance than in the studio.
He was defined. He was very nuanced.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah, very nuanced. And, you know, there was one guy, and it's terrible, I'm going up totally blank. He was a Wagnerian, I think, American tenor. Very big in the 60s and 70s.
James King?
No.
Was he American?
I believe he's American, yes. And I can't remember his name, and I love him. He was such a fabulous actor on stage, and he had a beautiful, big, big voice. I loved his chanson. I loved his voice on stage.
Contemporary?
No, he was around the 70s, you know, 60s, 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s. What the heck was his name? Isn't that terrible? I'm sitting here and I can't remember. I could see him right in my face. I think of him because he sang that tenor aria with Delilah, and he sang it on his back. What was that big aria, the tenor sings in that?
You mean the soprano thing? The mezzo.
Is it the mezzo that sings in it? He sings Dalila, Dalila.
Well, that's the tenor sings that, but the aria is Mon coeur,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's the aria. There's a moment in that this tenor has where he's on his back, and he's singing that thing, and that, forget it. That, like, 2 minutes, that minute right there, forget it. He kills me. But he was really, really committed to making his performances live, like they were real. They were real every single time we ever saw him. You know what? I'm going to go back and try to figure that out.
Not Domingo.
No.
Not Delmonico.
Nope. Where do you stand on Domingo?
Well, I admire Domingo greatly.
He's very musical.
Musically, he's not my favorite tenor. I mean, I think Domingo always was short on the top, as they speak.
Well, he's a retrained baritone.
Yeah. He was never a high C tenor.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, he finagled that. He got around that for a long time. But I think there again, it depends. Domingo went through different periods. There was a time when I heard Domingo, I thought, well, this is just not good.
Yeah.
And there are other times when I heard, I said, you know, wow, this really was
pretty good.
Terrific here.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And as you said, Jane, the musicianship and the musicality were very, very high.
How about Cheryl Melnes? Do you like Cheryl?
I did like Cheryl Melnes. I had a little problem with him at the end because the pitch was getting a little funny. And he was certainly.
I think at his prime years, he was stellar on the stage too.
Yeah.
You know, great singer.
Yeah. And of course, talking about rock stars, Domingo and Melnes at one point in their careers were the rock stars, the male rock stars of opera. I mean, today we have Jonas Kaufmann. Who's kind of a rock star. Very different.
Yeah.
Very different.
I have to say, when I first heard him, I was not sure at all he was a tenor. And I'm still not sure. I guess he is a tenor. I don't know. That's what he's singing. But there's a timbre in there that just makes me go.
Yeah, well, it doesn't make it because there's no tenor timbre. You're right.
You know?
He sounds like a baritone.
He does.
And he certainly can hit the high note.
That's right.
But it's done at an expense. It's not a voice that I sit down and listen to easily.
I have to say that it's I'm not sold, but it certainly is individual, right? I mean, we've never heard that before.
No, and when you hear there's a person I would say yes today. You hear a line of Jonas Kaufmann. You say that's Jonas Kaufmann.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else.
That's right.
Like that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, for sopranos in her prime, I really loved Anna Moffo.
Yes, that was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And again, she was a beautiful woman. And,
totally, yeah.
Yeah, she was. And she was able to portray those fragile characters better than almost anyone I know.
Yeah, until she changed what she was singing. And, you know, that all went awry pretty quick. But in her prime, when she was doing, the normal rep that her lyric soprano should have been singing, hard to beat. I grew up liking Sutherland. And I loved her upper voice. I didn't like her middle voice so much, but the beauty of her top notes was something that I always, I loved it.
Yeah, well, I think we looked. Singers have different facets about their singing, and the technical ability is one facet. Now, there have been some great singers that weren't technically fantastic, and there have been some technically fantastic singers that really were quite boring.
Yeah.
Honestly.
No, true.
Sutherland, to me, was never boring because the voice itself was just so exciting.
Yeah.
And she was able, again, she was able to do all of that color to her stuff. And Sutherland I did hear live on many occasions. I actually sang one time with Sutherland on the stage.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, in Lucia. I didn't sing, unfortunately, at Gardo. I sang Arturo. It was in Holland.
So
I got to sing the sextet with her.
Uh-huh.
And to stand on the stage and hear that sound was quite amazing.
Because
the voice was big. It really was big.
Awesome.
And she was able to do all of that fast and florid singing with no effort at all. No apparent effort.
Wowie zowie. Well, you know what? This is the fourth segment. Oh, my goodness. This went so fast, I lost where we were in our program. WKXL 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Thank you very much, Wayne, for being with us today. It's been awesome having this chat with you.
It's been my pleasure, Jane.
And everybody, thank you for joining us on Artful Living, and we'll see you next week.